Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. I read to you from Philippians 3, 17 through 19. Brethren, be ye followers together of me, and mark them which walk so as ye have us for an example. For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. Friend, as astounding as it might sound to the faithful child of God, there are those who choose to be enemies of the cross. History tells us of events in the 12th and 13th centuries that are called the Crusades. They were certainly not Christian in the biblical sense of the word. They were a fanatical series of military conflicts between so-called Christian Europe and the Mohammedan world for control of Palestine. In Europe, where Catholicism ruled and placed such an emphasis on relics, the so-called Christians wanted possession of what some considered to be the greatest relic of all, that which they called the Holy Land, and they sought to deliver it from those whom they considered to be enemies of the cross. The result was several military efforts, each with declining success, to capture and control Palestine, to liquidate all enemies and infidels, whether Jewish or Mohammedan, all heretics, which of course meant anybody who questioned papal domination and authority. Now there's no question that the Jews and the Mohammedans are enemies of the cross of Christ. But neither is there any doubt that those who instigated and executed these crusades were not Christians, as the Bible teaches. They were enemies of the cross. Such warfare is not the way that Christianity is to advance. Jesus once said, "My kingdom is not of this world," John 18:36. And Paul wrote, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds," 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 4. Ephesians 6 and verse 12 gives the Christian armor, and is not one for a little, carnal warfare, but a spiritual warfare. Yes, the cross of Christ had its enemies in the past, and it has had them all along. The first enemies of which we read, of course, were the Jews. With fair means or foul, legal or illegal, they tried to silence the message of Christianity. Even from within the church came the digressions of Judaizing teachers who falsely preached that the Gentiles, in order to come to Christ, must accept the law of Moses. They attempted to bind circumcision and other matters as a part of the faith of Christ, Acts chapter 15 and Galatians 5. They attributed salvation to the works of the law, rather than the system of grace and faith and blood and obedience to the law of Christ that was purchased by the blood of Christ. Paul said that such were perverting the gospel, Galatians 1 and verse 7. Pagans and heathens and their idolatrous gods are enemies of the cross of Christ. Any religion that teaches that there is more than one deity, one Godhead, is an enemy of the cross. In Athens, Paul said, "For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' Whom therefore ye ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands," Acts chapter 17. Of course, they mocked the truth that he preached. It is a wonder that Christianity, the cross of Christ, has survived through the ages, seeing the intense hatred and the enmity that has been raised against it from every side from its infancy until this present day. Enemies of the cross have arisen through the years of ecclesiastical history. There are vicious, impotent, and diabolical enemies now. Modernism, atheism, secular humanism are the most deadly ones facing the truth today. These philosophies deny everything the Christian cites as authority. They reject the Bible, the deity of Christ, that there is life after death, even the existence of God, the miracles, the virgin birth, the spirit of man, the resurrection of Christ, the efficacy of his blood, whatever. These isms deny everything about Christianity. Such enemies wage their warfare on many fronts. such as in pseudoscience, in the educational institutions, in textbooks, on television programs, in the political forums, even in seminaries and churches, some of which even claim to respect Christ. Denominationalism has long been an enemy of the cross, even though they claim to be a friend. Faithful brethren have done battle against denominationalism, and though some are compromising God's truth to go along to get along with denominations for the sake of peace, faithful brethren still combat denominational menaces. Denominationalism causes and feeds upon division and confusion and chaos, creating waste and doubt with creeds and churches of men rather than that of God. The denominational world has done more than Darwin or Marx or anyone else in paving the way for the advance of atheism and humanism. It has sown the seeds into the hearts of a generation after generation that it really doesn't matter what one believes just so long as you are honest and sincere about it. They've adopted names and doctrines and theories and theologies and philosophies that are contrary to what God has revealed in His Word, and the result is that more and more people wonder if the Bible is from God at all. The clergymen of denominations have much for which to give answer before God in judgment for promoting their religions, which are departures from the Word of truth. Now, we've already referred to moralism and humanism, but more needs to be said. Humanism contends that man is the most, and there is no need for God, any God. It denies there is absolute truth and standards. It is the preacher of the do-your-own-thing religion and do-your-own-thing life. And while it calls for what they call morality, it destroys any possibility for a standard of morality. If there is no God, whose standard of morality is to be followed? It is somewhat ironical that the very position of humanism, denying right from wrong and rejecting God, laughing at the Bible, ridiculing about life after death, has destroyed any basis, any reason, any motive, any purpose in being for what they call good and moral. Friend, if humanism is right, nothing matters whatever. Sin, hell, heaven, righteousness, they're not realities, and it makes no difference if there's no way to determine what is right. Which is which, they don't care. We're not going anywhere anyway, according to their teaching. But not all enemies of the cross are outside the church, even. One deadly enemy is the division and schism that exist. Now, while there is much religious division outside the church, sometimes the church bleeds internally for the same reason. One truth we need to understand is this. Those who cause trouble in the church are those who teach false doctrines and practices, or those who demand conformity to their opinions in matters of opinion. Those who resist the invasion of false doctrines and false teachers, who insist on allowing what God allows, are not those who create havoc for the church. It is error, friend, not truth, that causes division among brethren. Division often reaches the point of bitterness and lying and backstabbing and bad-mouthing and poisoned pen brethren, who will likely as not be big-name brethren, editors, college presidents, college professors, pulpit preachers, even for the big and prominent churches, attacking anybody who dares raise questions about what they say and do. Some of the most vicious diatribes that have been leveled against your speaker have come from just such men. Men who were compromising truth with error, diseased with go-alongism, teaching and practicing error, and who considered it an offense to even have to, what they have said, be questioned or investigated in the light of Scripture. They act as if everybody should simply bow and accept whatever they say, simply because they have said it. Sadly, we have in the church a scholastic elite who have been schooled in liberalism and modernism and who have been pouring their errors into the church, even through the schools where they teach, as much as any other one source. The compromising religious politicians and the liberal editors have aided and abetted them in their goal of restructuring the church to be more acceptable to the world. Their tactics include ridicule, intimidation, threats, lies, character assassination, in order to promote their heresies. Matters of opinion have also rent the church asunder, such as that which existed in the anti-orphan home and the anti-cooperation hobbies. Matters of faith are issues in the church because some inject false doctrines, promoted through perverted diversions, false teachers fellowshipped, digressive programs endorsed and advertised as if truth no longer really matters. And why are not such things enemies of the cross? Friend, this biting and devouring of one another is tearing the church apart. There's no way to stop it until error is removed. The trouble today is that error has been so adopted in many churches that little can be done. The warnings against apostasy and the demand for authority for what is said, done, and taught are being ignored in favor of what Brother Big or some scholar has decreed. Worldliness and hypocrisy in the church is one, possibly one of the most potent weapons against the cross in the devil's arsenal. Isn't it strange how Christians provide the devil with one of his most powerful weapons? What better way to cause people to scoff at Christianity than to have the capacity to array a host of people who claim to be Christians, but who are practicing the very things the Lord condemned and omitting what he commanded? Some have refused to become Christians because of the hypocrisy in the church. Now, of course, such people will not be excused from their duty before God. We can't go to heaven on the sins of somebody else. But what a sad and distorted display so many present by the daily lives they lead, while at the same time professing to be followers and disciples of Christ. But what can be done? You know, to bemoan bad situations is not enough. Nothing will be done until another enemy, the enemy of lethargy and indifference and inaction, is removed from the hearts and lives of brethren. This "let the other fellow do it" attitude has put many to sleep, and they're content on the sidelines. Spectator religion, that's about all they have. They just watch, but not participate. And that's the way it is with many. The only time they get aroused is when somebody says they ought to act. They never speak up, stand up. They can't be counted on for the side of truth. And in fact, occasionally they'll criticize those who do stand for the truth. The enemies of truth are sapping the strength from the church, because some members of the church are allowing them to do it. We've branched out into the fun, food, and frolic fellowship with games and gymnasiums and ball teams and glamour and gimmicks, and the sound, solid message of salvation has been dimmed in the process. So much of the church suffers because many obviously take the lethargic and contemptible attitude, "So what?" The goal of any who oppose the cross is to ultimately destroy it and its influence, whether intended or not. But in contrast to the enemies of the cross, there are those who are like Paul. He said in Galatians 6 and verse 14, "But God forbid that I glory save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world." This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.